Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Hello and welcome back to the PLL Happy Hour Podcast alongside Chris Rosenthal. I'm Kevin Brown for Inside Lacrosse. Rosie, moving closer to you. That only means one thing. The chemistry is moving closer together. The cohesion in the podcast is getting that much better. Rosie, how are we feeling after week 5 action?
Feeling good. Feeling still like I have no idea what the future holds for any of these teams. New York Atlas show up and make things real interesting. Winning both of their games, defending home turf, and hopping out of last place, shaking up the standings once again.
You know, you get your bling and you feel pretty good about yourselves. You know, it's like, hey, we did do that last year. Well, and here's a little reminder of it. I was told it was a great showing from the New York Atlas since their Thursday night dinner received their rings ahead of the Long Island action at Hofstra's Schuylkill Stadium. Thankfully, we didn't see any crazy turf monster action that we saw in the NCAA quarterfinals. But, Rosie, we did see the New York Atlas go 2-0. And like you said, it was much needed because they have 3 weeks off. It could not have come at a better time as long as you win both games. If they split, you're still feeling a little uneasy. They won by the slimmest of margins both games. They went 0-2, then you're going to the break 1-5. That would be just an absurd second half of the season hole to dig out of. So good on the defending champs to dig themselves out. Rosie, just the slimmest of margins in that first game, Boston. Well, which game do you want to start with? The slimmest game of inches against the Cannons or the comeback win of the season so far against the Lips?
Let's go first things first. Let's talk about that Friday night. Atlas Cannons pulling off the one goal victory. Just barely.
Just barely. All right. So I do enjoy from time to time looking at the win probability charts. Which do you think had a greater chance of winning, the Whip Snakes against the Atlas or the Cannons? The Whip Snakes in the second quarter when they were up 10-3 or the Cannons in the early fourth quarter?
Well, I'll tell you which one I felt was most likely. I definitely thought that Whipsnakes game was good and over pretty early in that one. So I don't know what the actual probabilities said, but I was definitely starting to, you know, look around and figure if I had something else to do in that second half.
So did the Whipsnakes, because they let their foot off the gas. Let me tell you what, they... And, you know, I was sure you were going to say that answer because it was actually the Cannons had a better chance of winning up, what was that at the time? Just under 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, they had an 89% chance of winning, 89.89, whereas the Whipsnakes, up 10-3 in the second, had a 86.59%. And just to round it off, because I was looking into it, I thought it was very interesting. The Archers and Redwoods game, which we'll get to. The Archers had an actual 80. It was a very similar number, the exact same number, 89.89% chance of winning with 11 minutes to go in the fourth quarter against the Redwoods, and they lost. So it's anyone's game. You got to play to the final whistle, Rosie. And in this one, the Boston Cannons certainly did that. They had two excellent chances in the final minutes, but that critical two-pointer from new father Brian Costabile turned the tide Shout out Brett Makar, having a heck of a defensive player of the year resume season all around stats wise to get it to him. Costaville cans it. The trade goals and Colter Maxey, what a look. Like, roll back lefty, middle of the field. Like, you bet your money on Maxey canning that. And Holman coming up the hash, quick turnaround, getting something off back foot, double pipe. Man, I thought that crossed the line. What was your initial reaction when they're reviewing this and the ball is, it looks like it's crossing the line in my mind. I couldn't tell if I just wanted overtime or not, or what.
Well, you know, so I thought when it happened, I thought it was a goal. What it reminded me of was a few weeks back, I noticed Marcus Holman kind of having, I just want to say, I guess, rotten luck. And I asked during a post-game press conference, I was like, hey, you know, Coach Holman, and I asked Matt Campbell, who was there too, was like, you have a shooter like Marcus, he's getting great looks, but it just kept seeming to be something this season, right? Like, it bounces off of somebody's foot, or it hits the pipe or something like that. And, you know, just the breaks, just the tiniest direction in the wrong way, kept kind of sticking it to the poor guy. And he said, you know, you don't really say anything to a shooter like that. You just kind of let them shoot their way out of it. And so, you know, as soon as that play happened, I just remembered thinking, you know, way earlier what you do for somebody who keeps kind of getting bit by poor luck, because this was just about the worst we've seen.
The worst we've seen, and just a monumental game between a couple 1-3 teams. And now the Boston Cannons are 1-4. And the big storyline coming out of this week is the release of two-time MVP finalist. A couple all-pro seasons, led the team in points last year, led the league in assists last year. Asher Nolting released to the player pool. And it's a big shock. It's an end of an era for a player who cemented his status as the ex-attackman for the Boston Cannons to the point that they traded Pat Cavanaugh coming off a national championship because he didn't like playing midfield. And they were like, listen, well, we got Asher back there and he's playing great. Fast forward to this season and it's not looking like it paid off. Rosie, what is your takeaway from this whole situation?
I mean, first and foremost, I guess big picture shock, but, you know, immediately not a shock. You know, you hear the news and, you know, I guess the best way to say it is the writing's kind of been on the wall, right?
Right.
Once he's been unprotected, you know, week after week, the first week you're kind of like, okay, maybe they just want to go with a different look, or maybe it's almost like a, really like a disciplinary sort of thing. You know, I didn't like how you played in that first game. We're going to sit you and maybe just watch how we want the offense to run, like that sort of thing. All right, maybe that could work. Or you actually want to try a different look in your offense. And Asher Nolting was such a key part of the offense. Maybe conceivably they would want to put him on the sideline and see how it looks without him. And then it just kind of became more and more evident, you know, Brian Holman was just kind of like, I like what we got out there. I like the way things are looking right now. You know, regardless of winning or losing, it was still feeling good about the guys he had on that field, especially when we did see, you know, Brian Kelly with a huge game there against Philadelphia. It kind of seemed, all right, maybe there isn't such an easy way for Asher to hop back on that field. And then, you know, you get the three games in a row unprotected. Then I think after the second one, we were all kind of waiting to see what happens, you know, if they kind of put him back protected and kind of just juggle it that way, or, you know, put him back in. And they chose just leaving him unprotected again. So, you know, as far as releasing him, I guess at this point it was just kind of a matter of time, you know, if no other team claimed him after that third unprotected week. So, I mean, shocking overall, though, that it got to this point. You know, if you'd asked me a year ago where I thought Asher Nolting would be, You know, we'd probably be talking about, you know, is he in the MVP contention, you know, heading into the All-Star break? You know, is he lined up to break some records or something like that? He's been such a member of a dynamic tandem with he and Holman there. So it is, it's surprising to see that duo just kind of collapse and evaporate in this sort of fashion.
We both want to do a little more reporting and digging in on the situation as a whole. So check back on insidelacrosse.com for that and more. But yeah, Rosie, you put it perfectly. It's just like this league, you're going to have a short leash on things when there's so many talented offensive players waiting in the wings. And for Boston, it's not a great situation because teams like the Atlas and the Water Dogs in particular have just loaded up on offensive talent. They've stockpiled to the point that Boston just cannot have. And, you know, that's why the 3 games in a row on the unprotected roster comes in clutch for situations like this. But turns out that they have a couple Canadians coming back. Philadelphia, this is I'm talking about, with Matt Collison and Silas Richmond going through the visa process and being activated this week ahead of San Diego weekend. Rosie, I have been sitting on this take that Philadelphia would be wise to be, if you're Dave Cottle, if hit home runs all off season, just like, all right, coming back to pro lacrosse, banger, banger, banger. Let's just get this whole assembly of a super team. Very impressive work. There's going to be a few players that their market, their value in this market is only going to decrease when they come into the lineup. You have too many options. You have too many. We saw Kyle Lewis pop off the page and jump off the screen, whatever you were saying. Like, he was amazing. And Josh Yago dodging short sticks. Now how are you going to incorporate Silas and Matt Collison into this offense? My argument is you need to either explore an option where you can not bleed Boston dry, but like you have the most leverage at this point if you want to like dangle Silas Richmond over the Cannons and like, listen, hey, you need a really good attackman here. Now you released Asher Nolting and Brian Kelly has come back to earth. The cheaper option, Rosie, would be Josh Yago. Space Force, who knows how long his longevity in this league will be due to those commitments. And he can dodge. He played Exapac for Air Force and Notre Dame. And he'd be electric if given the ball more in that Cannons offense to initiate and get cleaner looks with the defense rotating for Marcus Holman and Calder Maxey. Like, there's just got to be one of those playmakers from Philly that you can dangle over Boston's head. What do you think, Rosie?
I mean, it's certainly worth giving a call about because I genuinely don't know where you're going to put all of these guys, right? You're going to have just kind of some head-scratching bench calls, right? Like, you're just going to have to sit some guys who are going to be absolutely bewildered as to how they're sitting on the bench. And maybe they buy into that because that is kind of how Dave Cottle is familiar with doing it. I remember he won a championship, if I'm not mistaken, when he was there with the Bayhawks, and they were rolling out Casey Powell, John Grant Jr., Matt Abbott, Ben Rubior, all in Spallina, and you name it. Basically, everybody's rolling out on this team. Nicky Polanco. The Bayhawks won a championship 1 year where Stephen Brooks was just in street clothes for the championship game because they just understood, hey, somebody's going to have to sit all the time.
Yep. So Al Dixon on that team.
Yeah. So maybe that's going to have to be just, maybe they're bringing Bayhawk ball to the Philadelphia Water Dogs. And, you know, it's like going to be a situation where like, hey, we're going to win. I don't care who you are. You're going to have to sit X number of games out regardless. But like I said, it is definitely worth giving a call. I'm curious as to what Brian Holman would be willing to part with at this point, or kind of maybe, I don't want to say punt to a degree, but I wonder how convinced he is that, you know, looking around, hey, maybe we don't have it right now. And maybe, you know, maybe we should get rid of some of these guys or get rid of some draft capital to actually, you know, pull ourselves up and try to get back in contention. He certainly seems pretty positive at this point as far as, you know, what he does have. But, you know, I don't know what the conversation is like when he's not in the press conference, but he seems to be feeling good about it, you know, making progress every game, real positive attitude. So, you know, maybe he's not actually a buyer right now. I'm really curious to see if they can get something out of him.
You have to be very curious. And the whole trade market value-wise is just so hard to gauge, especially when you throw draft picks in there. We're recording this Tuesday night, the day that the NCAA unanimously voted to approve the 5-on-5, the age-based eligibility model, where the whole 2027 class could go back, theoretically, to be in the 2028 class. And maybe you can start trading your 28 picks as a result of that, and like hype up the craze. We saw Joe Spallina trade a first round pick for Ryan Krotok, who has backed up the player who he traded a third round pick for, and Dylan Ward in the goalie situation for California. So it's very interesting. So it kind of has to be a player you would think, unless he would part ways with 2028 draft capital. If you give a 2028 second round pick for Silas, that's very good value. If like there's like a double graduation class coming out. But if you're going for Josh Yago, can you put in like Ty Kurtz in 22nd? You know, it's like, it's very interesting to see where you can kind of fill the gap, because I love Brian Kelly's debut, but he is just not getting it done at the moment. And you got to get creative when you're 1-4 to dig out of a hole here, because I do like your analysis of like, listen, Brian Holman wasn't like, maybe he's not a buyer or seller right now, because it was literally a game of inches. Like, they had the defending champs, like, very close. Like, they should have closed the game out first off, as I stated, with the win probability. But the force overtime, who knows what happens. Rosie, got to move on to the Atlas, unless you have any thoughts on any of that nonsense I just spilled out.
I'll just say one last thing, because there's no way we would know either way. But since we're talking draft-wise, I wonder, and like I said, we'll have no idea. I wonder if he would have handled the draft differently if he saw the end to the Asher Nolting story playing out this way.
Oh, no doubt. Like, what drafts are you talking about? Are you referencing the 24?
26. Does he go with Mikey Weishaar, second overall? If he knows,
he was thinking he would have to go Joey Spallina.
Right. If he knows the quarterback is out of the way. So I guess, you know, maybe he was ultimately just as surprised by this as the rest of us.
Correct. The draft was moved up this year. We'll dig into the story and timeline of things surrounding that Nolting situation. But listen, for your number two overall pick, I was super high on Mikey Weissar's ability to translate as a pro. It just hasn't happened yet for him. Very talented spark plug lefty midfielder out of Towson who played his last year as an attackman. So he's been dodging poles.
he's been getting pulled for the most part, especially with Matt Campbell out, and he's gone one goal, 0 goals, 2 goals, 1 goal, and shooting 25% of the season. So that's not what you want to see. You want some added production out of him, and they're going to have to get creative with plays. And offensive coordinator Will Manny thinking of ways to scheme the best out of him. Rosie, back on a more positive note, New York did in fact win both these games, and we've been talking about the team that they beat more of this podcast. Not only did they beat Boston, but they beat the team that was kind of the standard setter of through week four, right? Merrill Lipsnakes were 3-1 following their homecoming. They get a few weeks off, or could not have started faster with that 10-3 start, 6-0. They started against New York, playing their second of the doubleheader at Hofstra. What did you make of the Atlas's ability to come back, and Connor Schellenberger in particular regaining his MVP form?
Well, you know, I think you mentioned it, that ring ceremony. Maybe that was perhaps a bit of a reminder for Connor Schellenberger that he had to get back to business of doing MVP kind of stuff. But he certainly didn't do it alone. First and foremost, a huge shout out to our boy, Hugh Kelleher. Back-to-back performances. Heck of a weekend from that guy.
The Hugh train rolls on.
Fantastic work by him. Connor Schellenberger, 10 points during the weekend. Excellent work by him, but he certainly didn't do it alone, and he acknowledged his teammates who helped him out. Perhaps the most impressive stuff was how effective the pick play was. He was getting so incredibly open, or getting ideal matchups, getting short sticks. And, you know, if you think about it, they have played well, but the notion of putting a rookie short stick defensive midfielder against Connor Schellenberger is pretty daunting task. Right, so it's not a surprise that when they did find themselves in that situation, Shelly emerged victorious pretty much each and every time. It's a lot to ask if you get that matchup switched off of a pole. And, you know, the Whipsnakes have tremendous, tremendous defense. But, I think it was part of the two-man communication and part of the, just kind of breakdowns trying to stick with a guy like Schellenberger. It ended up just destroying Maryland. And they fell apart. It didn't really seem to be an answer, that Jim Stagnita could kind of provide as far as, this thing went wrong. I think after the game, he was probably a little bit shell-shocked by it. Just like, wow, what the heck happened? We just kind of, one thing after another, and you look up and you just kind of a beatdown after what was going so well for him early. I'm sure if you ask him today, he probably has a much different assessment of it than, right after the game. New York just started doing a lot of little things right. And I think that's kind of been something they've been missing out thus far. But you start getting contributions from a lot of other people, like you said, Shelly, but a lot of people who also need to kind of do their parts to make his job easier. You see Eli Gobrek putting up a big goal. Just guys like that chipping in, doing their roles, not doing too much, but doing their roles. And New York just looked a lot better, even with a guy like Danny Logan being out of the lineup and being a little banged up when he was there, and Trevor Baptiste being out. They had a lot of problems. It wouldn't have been a surprise if they lost, right? You say, well, look at what they're trying to do, patch this thing together. I think they did tremendous work with everybody kind of doing their own little part.
And Stags is probably used to being the one leading the comeback, right? And all of a sudden you lose the guy having the GLE swim move, Levi Anderson to Atlas, and then Matt Rambo getting claimed and having that perfect script writing of going dodging the short stick. They're daring him to do it. launch it. He's scoring the clutch there against us, dude. And he does it. And he sticks it for his second goal of the game against the Whip Snakes. And they complete the comeback. A very impressive 16-14 win for New York in catching up with New York coach Mike Pressler at the Best in Class event up at the 76ers Fieldhouse. Rosie, it was fascinating because not only was he there, but so too were Whipsnakes defenders Matt Dunn, who is very heavily involved with Demir Klass, a very great event. Matt Dunn and Tim Mueller. Like, Tim Mueller is just like, no, not, it's first off, just a superior communicator on the sideline. Like, he is calling stuff out for these high school rising freshmen and just real time. Like, he is of a great defensive mind. So it kind of, it's, the Quint was pretty hard on them with the lapses, right, a pick play. And I think that'll come to your point with those rookie short stick defense midfielders. But the point that Pressler was bringing up was it was kind of a very not too noticeable on first watch, but a very important switch in game plan where they're leaving their offensive midfielders on the wings of faceoffs. You saw Brian Costabile and Hugh Kelleher pick up some key ground balls. And there was a sequence, and this was because Danny Logan was going down, and they activate Jake Stevens into the lineup. So it was kind of by committee, right? We'll get into the Archers, four defensive midfielders playing each week next. But this by-committee approach worked, and shout-out Brian Costabile on 3 hours of sleep. Like, he has one sequence that really turned the tide that wasn't the two-pointer, where he was huffing and puffing, going back and forth, offense, defense, for about three possessions, and Pressler's calling him off. Listen, let's get a fresh guy on. No. I've got Aiden Carroll on me. So not only is it just if it's one of the rookie D-mids, sure, let's get him into the two-man game with Connor Schellenberger. But when you get an offensive midfielder stuck on the Connor Schellenberger, like, Aiden Carroll's like, no, man, like, no switch. You got to get through it. And it was a great screen. And Connor Schellenberger just gets that space to get into the middle and sticks a huge one. So just really good shifts and game plan all around, tactically, personnel-wise, player-led, and a very impressive win from New York. Rosie, round us off from the action at Hofstra. Takeaways from the California Redwoods' ability to escape the Archers in another high-scoring one, 16-14.
I mean, there's really no place to start other than Dylan Malloy, right?
Dylan freaking Malloy. My goodness.
Dylan Malloy. I was trying to think about exactly what makes Dylan Malloy so much fun to watch. And here's my theory. Dylan Malloy is a combination of completely understandable, his game. Like, you have no doubt what you're watching. You know, it's not complicated. You know what I mean? Like, it's very accessible to watch what he does and to just get it. But in that same regard, as accessible as it is entirely unrelatable. He could tell you exactly step by step what to do to play exactly like Dylan Malloy. And you would look at those instructions and you would be like, I don't think this is going to work for me, Dylan Malloy. And it's not. It's not going to work for you. It is so unique where he's just like, okay, I am going to just lower my shoulder into this other professional athlete who is 2 inches taller and 20 pounds heavier, and I am still going to send him, you know, back on his heels 2 feet, and then I am going to spin super quickly, switch hands, and all in one motion, you know, stick the top corner with a lefty shot. And if you want to try it, like, you know, next time you're doing men's league, by all means, go out and try to play like Dylan Malloy. Some part of it is going to fall apart for you, I guarantee it.
I cannot stop watching the BTB. Like, the fact that, like he I'm not sure if he loses his grip on the bottom hand, but you can tell that, like, at the end, if he follows through with just the one hand.
Right.
Part of me thinks that he's getting a little more, like, change of angle there.
I mean, and
it goes bar down, pipe in, like, unbelievable.
Yeah, the whole thing is nonsense. He's never looking at the goal. Never looking at the goal. Like you said, the one hand is just off way earlier than necessary. You know, generally it never comes off. If you haven't seen that in slow motion, folks, hop on Twitter or maybe on Instagram and see if you can find the slow motion. They isolated it and made it its own clip, as rightfully deserved, because it doesn't make a lick of sense. Dylan Malloy was just on fire doing exactly what Dylan Malloy wanted to do against very, very good defensive opponents and a stellar goalie in Brett Dobson. But it was just one of those nights. You know, big, big weekend for the new dads. They all kind of crushed it.
Yeah, Father's Day weekend, baby.
They all crushed it. Costabile was huge. A pair of two-pointers Father's Day weekend for him. And clutch ones at that. And Dylan Malloy dropping 7 on his own with 2 helpers. 99 points if you had him on your fantasy team, by the way. And, absolute monster.
Did you?
No, I very much did not. Because I was like, oh, you know, well, I'm sure he'll be okay. But, you know, I was nervous about going against somebody who had, Brett Dobson and Cage. I was like, well, you know, maybe he'll have, you know, 2 goals or something like that. But, you know, Archer's defense, probably going to keep those guys pretty quiet. But I was wrong.
The strength of their team, 18 saves for Brett Dobson. Post-game, he says, the closest thing to John Grant Jr. that we've seen since John Grant Jr. has hung it up. Rosie, what are your thoughts on that? Because I think that's all that we have kind of envisioned for Brennan O'Neill. And, you know, he still has some ways to go to grow into that. But turns out it's been in front of our eyes the whole time.
It really is. It is a great comparison because it is the physical with the finesse. That combination that most players just can't access. And so, you know, it's just going to be, you know, you are going to have to stand in that little octagon, essentially, against Dylan Malloy, who's going to just continue smashing into you. And then, when you think you're engaged in this kind of knockdown, drag out fight, he's going to do the most finesse sort of stuff. And, had some great assists, had leading the cutters with his sort of a lever pass kind of assists, is so much just dainty finesse also mixed with the, just a wrecking ball in there. And the combination is very, very rare. But yeah, Junior had that and Malloy demonstrated as well.
Some good player comps indeed, Rosie. Let's look forward a little bit. We've got San Diego weekend on the horizon. But Rosie, the All-Star Game rosters have been unveiled and the East versus West format is back for another year. Rosie, the lineups are pretty stacked here and we've got some takes on omissions and the WLL rosters as well. The team Izzy Skane versus the team Ashley Humphrey in Annapolis, July 5th, celebrating 250 America. 250. And this is a very special event for the league and WLL together. Last year, the WLL All-Star Game was electric, and it's going to be definitely electric again this year in now the first full season. Rosie, you check out all you fans can check out the full rosters online, but Rosie, I'm going to steal your question from pre-production because we've got that going on this electric podcast. Was there a player that you think you would love to see that wasn't on the roster?
Yes, indeed. There is an Eastern Conference All-Star who I would love to see not included, and certainly for good reason, because he only has one game under his belt. But I would have loved to see some Kyle Lewis in a game that doesn't count.
What an electric game it was.
Yeah, no, it would be, I want to see, I'm sure he will be there next year, and I am by no means calling it a snub. That's someone who has played professional lacrosse for probably about 28 to 30 minutes. Did not make the All-Star team, but I'm just saying, based on what he put on the field during those minutes, I would have loved to see him running up and down with the rest of the guys in an exhibition game. So maybe next year, Kyle Lewis, get you in for a couple more games. We'll see you there. Same question to you. Who do you, if you could add one person, like a, you know, they'll do that sometimes, just get grant a special exemption or something like that, regardless of stats or numbers or anything like that. If you're just adding one person to this roster, who's getting the call?
Well, I'll give you three answers, and for three different reasons. Two different reasons. One, your answer is impeccable because it's based off vibes and what you want to see in an all-star game environment. Like, Kyle Lewis is electric. Excuse me, and he has the ability to pull off the show-stopping, unbelievable, jaw-dropping plays that, quite frankly, the fans at Navy Memorial Stadium deserve, and that's a great shot by you. The answer I would give, you know, you're thinking about along that line of who can pull off crazy highlights, who can pull off some fun connections in this game. Xander Dixon, he's had a very solid season, coming off a good weekend, 14 points, 11 goals, 3 assists, most connections for a duo in the league with Connor Schellenberger. The shock of the East, it came in by form of the Merrill Whipsnakes. TJ Malone, I don't think is like an all-star game format player. He's got 14 points as well. He's very fundamental, but like he deserves to be there. I think he has the merit for it, but Joey Spleena, you gotta send him. I agree with that addition. Owen Hiltz is the guy that probably doesn't deserve to be there in the Western Conference to give you a guy out west, but would be electric with his stick skills, flashiness, BTPs, one-handers, whatever you have to order, because I mean, Pat Cavanaugh is another one. Like we saw last year when he like flung that one-handed lefty top shelf, was like, yeah, Leon didn't like that one. It's like, yeah, I don't think so, man. Like you just did him dirty. Great soundbite of last year's All-Star game. So there's three, four options for you, but really three for this environment. And TJ Malone is more of like a, all right, why is he not on there with the Whipsnakes? It would have made them, interestingly enough, the most well-attended team as well. We were doing the roster breakdown, and they are tied with the Carolina Chaos with six All-Star player selections.
Yeah. I wonder if, you know, having it in Annapolis, maybe they should have. I do wonder if it's going to be a Whipsnakes crowd. I don't know what kind of loyalty the good folks in Annapolis have, or if it's going to be people, you know, traveling from all over. But I wonder if they're going to be clamoring for and cheering in particular for some of those Witch Snakes All-Stars.
Rosie, let's preview the action out in San Diego. Week 6 is here, the midpoint of the 2026 PLL season for some, maybe close to all. The matchups are very enticing. It's a doubleheader for the Redwoods. Like I mentioned, the Atlas are now off following their doubleheader. And we're going to start with the Maryland Whipsnakes versus Denver Outlaws getting the weekend started. And Rosie, what are you looking for in this one?
I mean, so first of all, I mean, I guess just the question is, how does Maryland bounce back from that loss, right? You know, I have to imagine they had some lessons learned, you know, maybe some things they want to shake off and forget, maybe some things they got to take to heart, you know, maybe some sort of lesson, you know, the old kind of a horror story when you're watching, you know, a Michael Myers movie or something. It's like, you know, you gotta put the guy down and keep him down. Maybe don't let these guys get away with it. Can they kind of jump out to a lead and hold the lead this time around? And Denver, you know, they get this time off. We do have to see, do they get Jerry Bernhardt back in the lineup? I think that's kind of a big question. See, and if so, if he returns, how they'll incorporate him as well. So, you know, a couple of things still up in the air. But my big question is watching to see how that Whipsnakes offense that got real quiet in that Atlas game responds to it this time around.
No doubt, is when you have that gifted of an offense who are such great passers and you start making them, you know, forcing them to dodge the score. It's kind of been the story of Joey Spallina's career, quite frankly. And when you had an older veteran, Rob Pinnell, now just 8 points off Rob or Paul Rabel's career points record, then you're going to, I think they still have the complementary pieces. Look, you still got Aiden Carroll. You still got TJ Malone. Don't hit the panic button yet because you collapsed one game. You had a long layoff. This will get you motivated and thinking straight. And it's going to be a good one. I really am excited for this matchup. After that one, or did you have one more thought?
Yeah, I was just going to say, speaking of panic button, you know, how, granted we're not even to the All-Star break yet, but how important could this game be for those Denver Outlaws in their quest to get back to the championship? You know, sitting at 500 right now, you know, a 2-2, but they do have a tiebreaker loss, to the Archers. So, you know, granted not in conference, but as obvious as it does seem, they got to put some points and some wins on this board here.
It is a great shout, because was it on this podcast that I released that take week, if you want to call it? It was not a take week. It was a tape that the Denver Outlaws really needed to take seriously of getting that first round bye like they did last year back, because if you get on a first round game with Blaze Reardon, that's trouble. That is trouble in September and late August. And now all of a sudden, if you get in the first round game with Dylan Malloy, then you're like, oh boy, that's also trouble. Maybe not as much as Blaze, but certainly a storyline to follow, because Denver is still the Vegas favorite, and we want to see if they can formulate another challenge in 2026. The next game out there, Torero Stadium, the first of California's doubleheader, a big one for the Cannons. Can they turn it around for kind of the storyline for however many weeks straight here versus the Redwoods on Cloud 9, atop Quentin Kesnick's power rankings here at 3-1. Finally getting some respect, Rosie?
Yeah, you know, I think partially, aside from just winning the last game, I think part of it was California's ability to, you know, when they penciled Cullen Brown in, they had a lot of adversity regarding their, I guess, their original defensive roster plans. A lot of guys getting hurt, a lot of guys dropping out there. But, you know, it seemed like they had, you know, granted, 14 goals is quite a bit to give up, but, you know, they certainly did enough to win, and I thought they had enough pieces in place there to at least, you know, at least keep things together, at least keep a Band-Aid there to try to figure out what the future is going to look like for that defensive core. So, yeah, you know, certainly deserved to have them much higher in those power rankings. You know, if you have a game like this coming off of where Chris Kavanaugh gets to be, I guess, a quiet 5-point game for him, yeah, yeah. I think that bodes well for the whole offense moving forward. And I guess the question here is this, like, are we going from practically must win to literal must win for the Cannons? Or is that still, are we still just kind of hovering over the panic button until, you know, mid-July for that?
We've reached that territory, I would say. If they don't make a move, and by the time this podcast comes out, one may have been made, but if they don't, which I think is more likely, then if you lose this game, it's really tough going into the All-Star break at 1-5 and without an answer already. But listen, the game after that, you could start to find your answers, because it's the what I was posing earlier in this podcast with the Water Dogs versus the Archers, offense versus defense in this one. And listen, Philadelphia has too many playmakers, Rosie. Spread the wealth a little bit. Give Boston someone, please. They need them.
Yeah. Announced earlier this week, Collison and Richmond both good to go for this one. I mean, what does that mean for some other guys on that roster? We'll find out. I genuinely don't know how they're going to balance it out. But no, I can't wait to find out. And they get a heck of a test against a Utah team that has traditionally been pretty strong defensively. And, you know, one thing just kind of kept going wrong for them last game. But, you know, we'll see if they can bounce back this time. It is tough, but I guess that's kind of the nature of the league that say, you know, good news, you don't have to face Dylan Malloy again. But bad news is facing CJ Kirst and Michael Sowers and everybody else on the planet. So, you know, we'll see how they bounce back.
Yeah. Going from that to that is not good news for Tony Resch's ice cream runs for Utah. The last game of the weekend comes in the form of the two teams who are potentially most likely slated for a Western Conference semifinal. You look at Carolina Chaos versus the California Redwoods. And Rosie, this one is so interesting to me in form of, you see a lot of different ways of constructing a roster each offseason. And these two teams have the last two seasons really formulated a way in which you see clear identities and just a fascinating way. Carolina, just that veteran defense coupled with a new look, rejuvenated offense last year and new exciting pieces this year with Nick Turner and Palumbo. Versus the Redwoods squad, who is going to come off a desperate Boston team game. And then you got just a clear identity on offense where it's, listen, you got a lot of dodge to score players. I think they've been moving it around the perimeter a lot better this season. And just piece together win by any way possible defense. And it's been working. It's 3-1 so far. What are you looking for in the week 6 finale?
Kind of looking to see how this past week off affected Carolina. You know, they had their homecoming and had a big win against the Outlaws to close that out. seen a lot of superstar play from Chad Palumbo in the Maryland week 3 showcase when he broke out. And then week 4, same sort of stuff from him. And some, you know, tremendous efforts from Ross Scott as well. I wonder how this downtime is going to affect them. Are they going to come back out? You know, especially Palumbo and being a newcomer, you know, how does he handle kind of firing things back up? You know, also California having gotten this chance to, you know, maybe kind of figure out how to formulate a little bit more of a plan. You know, certainly, you know, look, it wasn't a surprise when he was entering the league, but definitely not catching anybody off guard at this point either. So I'm looking to see what the Redwoods throw at him this time out.
It'll be fascinating, Rosie. I am pumped for this weekend. Better eyes on it. You've been crushing the coverage, and you listeners have been crushing just straight up listening and giving some great support to the pod. Make sure to check back next week for more Solidcroft podcast. And if you liked it, share it with a friend. Shout us out. Let us know. If you didn't, as Rosie likes to say, it's up to yourself, man. Like, and we'll be back with more PLL content on the IL channels. Make sure to keep it back here and can't wait to get it going.